everybody. Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick VinZant. Coming up in this episode, Olympic Games and drinking games.
I remember standing on a stool so I could see over the table and just playing with my dad and my granddad at the beginning. And he said, I was two when he first started got me playing.
The ball is traveling at such an intense speed that a lot of the times you're not really thinking consciously of what's happening in that point. You're just kind of reacting naturally. And when you got the uniform and you see the US flag on your shirt, it's a really humbling.
But doing it at an Olympics was just, that was something special. To get through that first match against France, we beat France 3-2. It was like 5.5 hours long.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, like, download, subscribe, share. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. We have two guests today, so I want to get right to them. Both of our guests are professional table tennis players who have competed at the highest level. Sam Walker competed for Great Britain in the 2016 Olympics and at the Commonwealth Games, and Kanak Ja competed for the United States at the 2016 Olympics and is the United States world champion. Just for some housekeeping, I'll ask a question. You'll hear Sam Walker first and then Kanak Ja. So what's your earliest memory? What's your earliest memory of table tennis?
I've always played, as far back as I can remember, I've played three sports, so table tennis, cricket, and football. And I remember standing on a stool so I could see over the table and just playing with my dad and my granddad at the beginning. And he said, I was two when he first started got me playing.
I would say my earliest memory is playing with my mom, actually, in one local community center, like 5 minutes from my home in Milpitas, California.
When did you realize you were good?
I guess I realized I was good was when I was like 9 or 10. So that's kind of when I realized, okay, actually, you know what, like, I am quite good at this game.
Okay, the first time I played a tournament internationally was when I was 11. It was a 12 and under competition, kind of for international, for young players. I kind of had no idea what to expect going in there. I thought maybe I would be terrible, but, you know, I was okay compared to a lot of the kids from the other countries, and that kind of gave me an idea that I was not bad for my age.
So what makes you good at it? Do you have like an impeccable strategy? Are you really athletic, like great reflexes? Like, why are you good at it?
I think table tennis in general, it's a sport that requires a lot of different qualities to be a good player. I mean, mentally, you have to be extremely focused on the table. And physically, you have to be quite fast and explosive. It's a lot of fast movements in the sport of table tennis. I mean, as you know, there's not many long rallies per se compared to tennis or badminton, but the rallies are really short and intense. For me, naturally, I've always had quite a good sense of focus and awareness of what's going on in the match. So I can kind of see the game pretty well compared to a lot of players. And I think that's one of my biggest strengths.
Now, there's a lot of different factors right now. One being simply the amount of hours I've trained for it and the amount of experience I've got now. You're just keeping that motivation, the dedication to go into practice every day for 4, 5, 6 hours sometimes every day. And the mentality around that, and, you know, times when that are hard, when, you know, you've put in a lot of practice, you're not seeing the results, that sometimes are a bit demoralizing, to then keep getting up to go to practice. And, you know, a lot of people say to me like, oh, but you've got a great life, you know, you get to travel a lot for your job, you get to do something that you love, which is absolutely true. You know, I don't feel sorry for myself one bit, but sometimes it's really hard when you don't see the work straight away, you know, like the results of the work you've been doing straight away. Sometimes it can take, you know, a couple of years to see something happen in a match that you've been practicing. And the amount of time, you know, that's spent on your own traveling, and table tennis is an individual sport. So although you're playing for clubs and you're playing for your country, you spend a lot of time on your own, and you have to learn to, you know, enjoy that time being by yourself. And that's something that I think a lot of table tennis players have struggled with. And in terms of mental health as well, I think there's been a lot of like people have struggled with mental health in table tennis that probably not a lot of people know about because of the way the sport is. So there's obviously, when you say, how do you be good at table tennis? Obviously, you have to be good at table tennis on one side, you know, with through the training and everything like that. But you also have to learn and understand that you're going to be, you know, doing a lot of traveling by yourself. You're going to spend a lot of time in hotel rooms by yourself. And you have to learn how to kind of deal with that and be happy and enjoy that.
When you go up against somebody, obviously you're trying to win the point, but what are you trying to do? Are you trying to put enough spin on it so that it puts them out of position? Are you trying to just blast it past them? Like, what's the strategy?
It's going to depend. First of all, my strategy will be to go and try and play my game, which is an attacking game. I want to be playing top spins rather than, you know, than defensive shots. I want to, you know, trying to be playing aggressive, playing early, taking the ball early, and you know, playing with a lot of spin, but top spin rather than backspin, and being attacking. So that's my first game plan against anybody. Then the rest of it, in terms of the very detailed tactical stuff. So am I going to serve short? Am I going to serve long? Do I play more to the backhand, more to the forehand? How do I receive it? That all depends on which player I'm playing against. That comes with studying that player before you play them. Or sometimes you just know the players. You know, a lot of players you just know because you've played throughout the tournaments and the leagues for so long. You just know those players anyway.
I mean, in the end, you're trying to just win the point however you can. I would say the basic strategy, especially in higher level table tennis, is to try to kind of impose your game onto the opponent. For example, my style is I really like to stay close to the table and play with a lot of speed. What I try to do is not let the other opponent, oftentimes who have more power than me, have more time to play their big shots and longer swings and try to put them under a lot of time pressure.
Table tennis, more than any other sport that I can think of, the difference between what it looks like when regular people play and what professional people play, it looks like a completely different sport.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a, especially compared to a lot of people in the US, it's a really a different sport from what people imagine in their heads. In the professional stage, it's a really high speed and very physical sport in general. So much spin and on the ball, and the players are so physically fit with a lot of power and precision. So it's really a really technical as well as physical sport. And I think, I mean, that's one of the things I love about it, is that it has so many different aspects to the game, not just the physical side, but the technical and mental side.
How fast is that ball moving? Does anybody ever like clock it with a radar gun or anything?
It's moving quite fast, I'll tell you that. Actually, it's funny. Today in my training, we had a kind of device that helped track the speed of the ball. And I mean, sorry for the people watching in US, because I'm in Germany, so we're using kilometers. But I mean, the ball is going at an average of 70, 80 kilometers per hour, after even going to 100 kilometers per hour. So it's really fast sport.
I only know this because I live close to Canada, but 100 kilometers an hour is 60 miles an hour. So like you must have very good reflexes, I'm assuming.
Yeah, definitely. Reflex is a huge part of the table tennis. I think it's one of the fastest reflex sports, to be honest. You require a tremendous amount of reflex. I mean, the ball is traveling so fast and often with a lot of spin that you have to be able to adjust in even less than a second at times.
When you're judging the spin, are you watching the ball itself, or are you watching how your opponent hits it to tell what the spin is going to be?
Normally, you're watching the opponent, and first, of course, how he hits it. And also, in many cases, you can hear the sound the racket makes of the opponent when they hit it, which helps give you a better idea of the spin on the ball.
You can tell the spin by the sound of it?
Yeah, I mean, the sound is, I would say, a part of the way players read the spin on the ball. For example, if it's a very brushing sound from the opponent, you can tell there's a lot of spin on the ball. Then, of course, it also comes with a lot of just muscle memory, where naturally you just know what spins the ball from so many different practice sessions with different players. I mean, in the master game, the ball is traveling at such an intense speed that a lot of the times you're not really thinking consciously of what's happening in that point. You're just kind of reacting naturally and making small adjustments with your head during the point. But a lot of the techniques are just what you practice in the hall every day, and it's muscle memory.
But it depends. If I've played a shot first, if we're in the rally, I've played my shot first, there's only so many different variations of spin that they could put on depending on what shot I've done. So it's easier to predict when you're in the rally, because you can kind of minimize their options. Whereas when they serve and they've got the ball in their hand and there's not been any shot before that, they have every single option that they are capable of doing. So that's when it's a lot harder, and that's when I will, and probably most players, will then watch the ball a lot more closely, depending on see which way the ball is spinning. So there's a little marking on the balls, which is like the brand of the ball. So there's always a marking to say which brand has made the ball. And you can always see that spinning. And the more you practice it, and the more you see, and the more you're concentrating on that, the easier and quicker it gets to read that spin and see that mark spinning in a certain direction, or sometimes not spinning, which means there's not much spin on the ball.
So you're never like thinking, oh, I should hit this to the left side, or oh, I should hit this to the right side. It all just kind of happens.
Yeah, definitely. I think in the rally, when you're attacking, it's normally the other player is defending, so you have a little bit more time, and then you're kind of thinking more to the point. But for example, the rally is going really fast and both players are attacking close to the table, then most of the time it's really hard to think where to play the ball or how to play the ball, and it's more just reflexes and subconsciously trying to reach the ball in time.
Are most, like, in terms of a physical size, like, is there an optimal size for a table tennis player?
Compared to other sports, it's a lot more open-ended than, for example, in gymnastics, where normally they're quite short and obviously extremely flexible and explosive. I mean, in table tennis, there are some general similarities between all high-level players, and normally you need a really strong and explosive legs and kind of a strong lower body. I mean, the core is also extremely important because, I mean, in table tennis, you're changing directions so fast. I mean, depends a lot on your style, because in table tennis, players tend to have a lot of different styles depending on their body type. For example, me, I'm quite short and a bit smaller than most high-level table tennis players, which is why my style is trying to be a little more quicker and faster and staying closer to the table to give the opponent more time pressure, versus some players that are taller and bigger, and they're generally not as fast as the smaller players, and they need more time, and they tend to play a more powerful game.
What's it like competing for your country?
It's always amazing to play for your country, you know, whichever tournament that is. But doing it at an Olympics was just, that was something special. It's what I took up table tennis because I wanted to represent my country at the biggest stage in the world, and that's the Olympics for our sport. And yeah, it was just such an incredible feeling to be able to go out there and play in front of, one of the biggest crowds we've had, or certainly as one of the biggest crowds I've had as a player, in Rio. And yeah, to get through that first match against France, we beat France 3-2. It was like 5.5 hours long, like the longest match ever recorded in table tennis at an Olympics. So that was crazy.
I mean, it's an amazing feeling for sure. I remember the first time when I competed when I was young, and when you got the uniform and you see the US flag on your shirt, it's a really humbling feeling, because when growing up, you see on TV and a dream, you know, that these are really a special group of people. So, I mean, to represent my country, it feels like the greatest honor, you know, and I'm always so proud to wear the shirt. And it also gives you a bit of a extra motivation when you put on the shirt to know, wow, now I'm representing my country. You know, it's a great feeling and a very proud feeling.
Were you in Rio?
I competed in Rio. I was really young at the time. I was 16 years old, and it was a really cool experience. I lost really early in the competition. The first preliminary round, I lost quite fast, but it was a really memorable experience for sure, and it gave me a lot of experience and confidence going forward. The Olympics is the biggest of events for me, for everybody in general, and also for table tennis. It's really the most prestigious event there is in the sport. So, I mean, it's really exciting, and looking forward to it and hope to compete well there.
Are you ready for some harder/listener-submitted questions?
I don't know, but I think so. So let's see.
Which title do you prefer, table tennis or ping pong?
I prefer table tennis just because it sounds a bit more professional. But I know a lot of people call it ping pong too. To be honest, when I'm in the US, I call it ping pong to people also, because they kind of have a better recognition of this word. But if you can, I would say table tennis.
Hardest type of spin for you to deal with?
Oh, I mean, there's a lot of spins in the game. I got to say the hardest type of spin to deal with is when you don't know what spin is coming, which is most often the case when a player is serving and they have a really quick wrist motion, and you almost couldn't catch what they just did. And then if you don't know where the spin is coming, it can just touch your racket and fly off to be the left side, the right side, just directly down. So the hardest spin is the one you don't know. It's on the ball.
I would imagine that this is the type of sport where even professionals can sometimes look completely ridiculous, right? Like the ball just goes shooting off into the stands. Does that happen?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times you can, even top players, they can look, I mean, bad, you could say, compared to what people would think. If you, I mean, misread the spin, it can oftentimes lead the ball going completely opposite the way you wanted the ball to go.
I can't say that I've watched a lot of table tennis or tennis, but it does seem to me like the person serving has a massive advantage, right? And the person who wins seems to be the one that can eventually break serve.
Yeah, the serve is a big advantage in sport. I mean, I would say like this, in general, when it's close, you want to be the one serving. Especially when you reach a higher level, the players, they're playing with so much quality on the ball that a lot of time what you're practicing is kind of just serve and just attack the next ball. So what players, especially the high level, do is they're so knowledgeable about the spin they're putting on the serve, they kind of know what to expect on the receive, and that helps them prepare their shot beforehand. While compared to once you reach the rally, I mean, it's more speed and reflexes and just kind of subconscious playing. But especially in table tennis, I'm not so knowledgeable about tennis, is that with the serve, you can really prepare how you want the rally to start. So the serve definitely is a really big advantage. And for the most part, the server has the advantage because he can kind of dictate how the rally will start.
I've always wondered when I've seen it, right? And you see some of those like long rallies and both players are like as far back as they can possibly go. Like, why doesn't somebody just hit it short?
Yeah, I mean, when both the players are kind of farther away from the table, in general, you're playing the ball with a lot of topspin because you need the ball to have the power to go to the other side. So you're playing the ball with a lot of topspin, which means when it bounces on the table, it kicks a lot to the other side of the table. And in general, yeah, it is pretty much almost impossible. I won't say impossible because it's everything is possible, but it's almost impossible to play the ball short just because you have to normally play a lot of tops and back just to have the power to make it reach over to the other side of the table. I mean, what a lot of players like to do is when they're close to the table and the other player is kind of farther away in defending, is they like to just kind of call it a drop shot where they just kind of touch the ball and make it go short over the table. So the player who's farther away from the table can't run back in time to catch it. But it's a really advanced shot and quite difficult to do.
Do you ever name any of your shots? Like the Jaw Express. Here comes the Jaw Express or something like that.
The Jaw Express. It's not a bad name. Normally not.
Is there trash talking in table tennis?
I mean, I think there's trash talking in all sports to a degree. I think more than others. I mean, we're definitely not like maybe the UFC or NFL or something where we're just trash talking on the court. Most of us are quite polite in most cases. I think one of the things, to be honest, it has to do with that is the sport is really dominated by Asians at the higher level. The Asian countries are really so strong in the sport, China, Japan, Korea, Taiwan. And in general, the Asian cultures, they're really polite on the table in the way that they don't trash talk or kind of provoke the other players. That's kind of, I guess, how their culture has seeped maybe a bit into us other countries at a higher level. But there's definitely some trash talk and some emotions, which always, of course, makes it fun for both the players and the spectators.
You can get, there's more kind of arguments with the umpire because there's a lot of rules around the service that you're not allowed, you know, you have to throw the ball up so high. You're not allowed to hide the contact. So when the ball hits your bat, you're not allowed to hide that contact from your opponent's like vision. So they have to be able to see that contact so that they've got a chance of reading the spin. And you have to have like a flat palm. You can't put spin on with your hand when you throw the ball up. So there's a lot of, you know, it's a tough thing that for an umpire to kind of have to judge all of those things. And it's quite a tough thing to referee. But, you know, when you can imagine when, you know, it's a big match in a big stage and, you know, some guy's got a really obvious, like, illegal serve because he's totally hiding it, he's throwing it back, you have to throw the ball up straight. And because those kind of things make it really hard to receive a serve. You know, if you throw the ball straight onto the bat rather than up, you can generate so much more spin and pace on your serve. And it makes it very difficult to read the serve. And some players bring that out only in an important point. And that's when you can have a big argument because it's not always easy for the umpires to see. When a player's not done it all match and then suddenly it's 9-all in the last set, and they need two more points to win and they've got two serves and they just bring out these two serves that are totally illegal out of nowhere. It's quite tough for an umpire to stand up and say, no, that's an illegal serve, because then their opponent will get the point. You know, so, and that's when you can have arguments in table tennis. That's the main reason you get arguments, and kind of, you don't really get trash talk. But between you only do it between the mates that are there. Like you say, like if your friend is a really bad shot, and you'll say, "Oh, that's got its own plane ticket." You know, like he's missed the table by like miles, like trying to play his shot, and you say, "You know, that's got its own flight ticket," or you know, things like that. Yeah, there's some when I used to play like local league that everybody used to say, like if I served off in local league, there was this against this one guy. So local league is when I was going back to when I was like 10, 11 years old, playing against all these old guys, which is just like in a local league kind of competition. And this older guy, if I served off, he'd always go happy birthday. Like, you know, cause it's just like, it's like the easiest point to give him.
Who is the greatest table tennis player? Who's the Michael Jordan of table tennis?
I mean, for me and for most players, his name is Ma Long. He's from China. And he's the current Olympic champion. He won in Rio, and he's the previous three world championships he has won. He's really something else in the sport, and he will also be competing in Tokyo. And if he manages to win there, I think he'll be the first or second seed going in there. He'll be the first player in history to win two Olympics, and that too, two Olympics in a row. So
the Chinese players in table tennis is, you know, almost, you know, everybody knows it, that the Chinese are the best at table tennis. And they are incredible. And they haven't lost a team match for 21 years now, which is incredible when you look at any nation of in any sport, which nation has gone 21 years without losing a team match, you know, in any sport. If you can name me one, then that's just incredible. You know, when I hear people talking about, oh, this is the best sports team in the world, they are, you know, for me, the best sports team in the world has been China in table tennis, because they've not lost a match for 21 years. And that's, you know, that's gone through three different generations of players, maybe more.
Does being an Olympian or a table tennis pro help you with the ladies, is the question.
I think being an Olympian maybe would help more in the U.S. than saying I'm a, if you say you're a ping pong player, the U.S. normally doesn't have such a high connotation in someone's mind.
Yeah, you got to lead with the Olympian,
you
right?
You got to lead with the Olympian in the U.S., but I got no further
nope. I have no further comment, and I have no further comment. Can this be a living for you, right? Could you do this for 10, 15, however many more years, and then retire?
I would say it is possible if you're at the really top and you really maximize your profits in terms of sponsorships and competing and prize money and the league. But in general, it is really difficult, and it is a lower salary sport compared to other sports, and in the US it is impossible to be a professional table tennis player.
How good are you at beer pong?
Do you know what? I haven't played beer pong probably since I was about 16 or 17, at house parties when I was like still like towards just coming towards the end of school. And I did actually used to be really good. So if anyone wants to challenge me, I'd be well up for a game, because I've not played for ages and ages.
I want to thank Sam and Canuck so much for joining us. If you want to connect with them, we have linked to them in our social media accounts. We're Profoundly Pointless on Instagram and Twitter, and we have also included their information in the episode description. You got to go to their Instagrams, because they have some video of them competing in table tennis. And I think more than anything else, what it looks like when you and I play ping pong is not what it looks like when professionals play table tennis. It's a completely different sport. It really is amazing to see just how good and how fast and the reflexes that these pros have. Okay, now let's go ahead and bring in John Shaw. Are you a spring guy or a summer guy?
I will say I'm a spring guy. Probably, you know what, I like how it is right now up here in Michigan, where you wake up and it's 40, 50 degrees, and then it maybe gets up to 50, 60, maybe 70. Then it's cooler in the nighttime again.
Okay, all right. That's a lot of information. I appreciate that.
I mean, you asked.
I didn't think you were going to go into the humidity and the Dewey Decimal Report or whatever it's called.
wrong thing, but all right.
If you were put into a library right now, could you do the Dewey Decimal System?
I mean, I know, I think I know what it is, but I would want to look it up first just to make sure I knew.
What a great example of something that people used to need that is now completely and totally worthless.
Yeah, 100%.
Even like horse and buggies are used by the Amish or the Mennonites. And somebody put an incredible amount of time developing that thing. Imagine Dewey comes back. Dewey comes back to life, however long he's been dead, and is like, hey, how's my decimal system working out? Like, oh, we got rid of that completely.
Dewey's probably pretty upset right now with humanity. If
Dewey's pissed off.
Dewey.
He's like, hey, I came back to life just to check on the progress of the Dewey Decimal System. Want to make sure you guys didn't screw it up. Oh, we haven't lost that thing in 20 years, man.
Yeah, bro. I mean, you know what a computer is, Dewey? No, it's a computer.
Poor Dewey.
So anyways, getting back to your original why. What does it matter if I'm a...
I just want to know, like, are you a weather person? Are you the kind of person who brings up the weather in conversation with other people?
No, I mean, not other than like my wife. I mean, I don't like just when I'm talking to my friends, be like, you know, bring up something about, you know, hey, it's going to rain on Saturday or, you know what I mean? I'm not that kind of guy, but I will say I didn't realize how allergic I was, like how bad my allergies were till last year.
There's probably nothing in my life that as soon as somebody starts talking about it, I can care less of than allergies. Like, as soon as somebody says the word allergy, I'm just, oh, God.
I mean,
I don't care at all.
Do you suffer from them?
I do, but my whole mind goes blank as soon as somebody says the word, like, oh, my allergy, nope. Like, my whole brain shuts down. I could care less about your allergies.
Well, I won't bore you with them then, but.
Unless you're allergic to something cool, like, I'm actually allergic to water. Like, oh. I'm interested in that.
I'm not. I'm most allergic to cats. That's about it.
Well, see, that's not an interesting allergy.
I mean, sure, I guess not. I mean, I'm not allergic to anything cool that I know of, just the basic stuff.
I mowed my lawn the other day, and somebody in my neighborhood walked by and was like, I'm allergic to fresh cut. I'm allergic to grass. How are you even alive?
You know, I asked that question because I'm also allergic. I'm literally allergic to everything known to man, pretty much. Like,
That's not true whatsoever. Don't use the word literally like that when it's not true at all.
I got one of those tests done where they poke you, you know?
Yeah.
With the 12 or 15 allergens. And everyone, like, it looked like I had been beaten. Like, my arm was full of welts.
So what all are you allergic to?
Pollen, grass, dust, dogs, cats.
God. Do you have to take a pill? Like, how are you even alive?
I do take a pill, yeah. Just over the counter allergy medicine. Like, I don't, nothing fancy.
Okay. You're just a baby. If you're not taking prescription strength stuff, then don't give me this. I'm allergic to everything.
To be fair, to not make me sound however you're making me sound here, they did prescribe me something, but I refused to take it. I only take something because my wife doesn't want to hear me complain about my allergies unless, you know, like I can take a pill, right? Like, stop complaining, you dumbass. Take the pill that will help you.
Yeah, you can't complain about it if there's something you can easily do about it.
Yeah, so that's...
Hmm.
But yes, I'm allergic to a lot.
See, I have asthma, and I bring up the fact that I have asthma to nobody, but I feel like you probably bring up the fact that you have allergies at least once a week.
But once again, only to my wife. I mean, I don't think...
Yes, then.
No, I don't think I've ever told, like, it's never come up with me and my friends where, you know, or whoever, random people that I can think of.
That's a hard thing to say to your guy friends. Like, guys, I can't go play golf today. My allergies are just, they're through the roof.
Claritin D isn't working here, guys. I'm sorry. I got to stay in today.
While we're on this topic, we forgot about it last episode. What's your candle of the month?
You know, that seems to be pretty popular. I feel like we should,
you got one email about it. Okay. Let's not put this out there. It's pretty popular. One guy told me he liked it.
That's very true. And I appreciate you, one guy. I mean, right now we have some rose bush, like a rose bush candle and lilac. So those are the two scents that are burning through my house right now. 'Cause my wife really likes lilac and, you know,
God, this is where we are in our lives, where we say things like that. Yeah. My wife really likes lilac, and my allergies are considerably worse. This is the conversation that 21-year-old me, if he was in the room, would have punched me in the face. Like, this, you're the biggest disappointment.
Yeah, I mean,
this is what
you're not the only one here that would have punched himself in the face. I would run in front of traffic.
This is what happened. Also, does a rose bush smell different than a rose candle?
Oh my gosh. Yes, it has a little bit more of a plant aroma, if that makes any sense, and not necessarily more of the flower. It's more like earthy, planty, not necessarily just the straight flower smell you get with the rose candle. Gosh, cool. All right.
Man, in the last year, you've legitimately spent a good percentage of your money on candles. Make your percentage, right? Percentage of your money has been spent on candles, percentage of money spent on alcohol in this year so far.
Well, see, that's not fair because, you know, I drank a lot of liquor the last year. So, I mean, that's 30, 40 bottles of, you know, or $30, $40 a bottle. Anyone who knows you knows that you don't spend more than $9 for a bottle of liquor.
Bottom shelf is the best shelf, baby.
But I mean, if I'm going like just beers, if we just keep it to beers, it's probably pretty even.
I spent 30% of my money on beer and 30% of my money on candles.
All right. Can we move on to giving some shout outs? Hey, you like my text earlier when I was like, yeah, bro?
I don't even remember it.
God, you sound like everyone else I text. All right. We'll start here with Justin Ray, a.k.a. Dork Party. Appreciate you. Omar Martinez, Brian Trainer, Tony Jacinto, Amy Labasso, Amy Collins, good old JW, Alex Lundin, Dave Weaver, and then this one is just for you, Nick, and their name is just A, fuck you. All right, let's see here. What would impress you more, Sir Nicholas? Someone who can drink more beers over the course of a night, or someone who can do more shots in a shorter span of time? What's impressive?
What's the difference? Either way, it's related to tolerance.
Yeah. If a person's throwing down 10 shots in an hour, I'm like, that.
It's much harder. It'd be much easier to take 10 shots than it would be to drink 10 beers. Just simply from a logistical standpoint, right? That's a lot of, that's 120 ounces of fluid in an hour. I mean, that's a lot of drinking.
See,
as opposed to arguably 20 ounces of fluid.
See, I don't agree. I mean, if it's over the course of a night and you're having a great night and you start to feel a little funky, 10 beers can turn into 15 beers pretty fast.
Right. But what's your argument? What's even the question? I don't even remember. Am I more impressed with somebody who can drink a lot of beers or a lot of shots?
Yeah, that's
but it's the same thing.
But it's not the same thing.
It is. The alcohol is measured in the same thing. A shot is the same as a beer. So if you can have 10 shots,
it's exactly the same
as drinking 10 beers.
It's not the same thing.
Yes, it is. Didn't you go to DARE in high school? Where they talk to you about alcohol and drugs.
Don't you talk to me about DARE, son.
A shot is the same as a beer. A shot, a beer, and a 5-ounce glass of wine are all exactly the same amount of alcohol.
It's not. I'm sorry.
It is. That's a fact. That's like 2 and 2 is 4. You can't argue with it.
You're telling me that a shot of 80 proof whiskey is the same thing as a 4.2% beer.
Yeah. A shot and a beer are basically the same thing.
I don't agree with you. I'm sorry.
Well, you're wrong. You can not agree with me, but then that's not agreeing with facts. I don't agree with facts. Just say that, and then I'll say okay.
Then I guess I don't agree with facts.
Okay, fine. All right. Thank you.
You know. Anyways, all right. What's the best drunk?
Oh, I'm so angry about this.
What? Because I mean, 3 shots.
Is the same as 3 beers.
Oh my, it's not the same.
A shot is the same as a beer.
It's not the same thing.
But it's not, it's the same amount of alcohol. The same amount of alcohol content.
No, it isn't.
Motherfucker, now I'm going to have to Google this.
I mean, listen, you're a smart guy. 80. If you have 3 shots of 80 proof whiskey, that's a lot more than 3 Heineken beers.
Here's the first answer. Beer has as much alcohol as a 1.5-ounce shot of whiskey or a 5-ounce glass of wine.
Okay.
I'll accept your apology in either a written form via letter or in an email.
I will send you an email for my apologies with a big FU at the end of it.
Okay, that's fine.
All right, what's the best drunk food then? Tacos, pizza, burgers? What are you going with?
Whatever's the messiest at that particular time.
God, you are a messy drunk eater, man.
I would say that probably burger. Well, it's whichever one of those you don't eat the most, I would say. It's definitely either tacos, pizza, or a burger.
Yeah.
It's probably whichever one you haven't had in the longest amount of time. True story, I did once pass out, like straight pass out at my house with an entire piece of pizza in my mouth, which my wife had to come downstairs and pull out of my mouth.
Because you were dying? Because you were choking or no?
She didn't. I don't think it got that far. I may have been struggling to breathe, but...
You got a small mouth, so
still pretty.
Last question. Would you rather take like a lump sum of money? Say you won the lottery. Would you take the lump sum or would you have it spread out over payments over years?
Well, everybody takes the lump sum, which means that there must be some reason that everybody takes the lump sum. Like if you die, you don't get it. That's what I'm assuming. I don't know the inner workings of the lottery, but everybody takes lump sum.
I'll never win the lottery, so me either.
Oh, I won the lottery when I married my wife, you insensitive. Why don't you see? You should have said that because you're not smooth. You're too worried about your allergies.
I buy my wife candles, all right?
Man.
I didn't forget Mother's Day this year, so there's that.
Oh, you're bringing up my dead mom again.
Oh, my God. No, I didn't bring up your mother, and I'm sorry again for your loss.
You just brought up my dead mom and how this is my first Mother's Day without my mom. What an asshole.
I didn't bring up your deceased mother at all, actually.
Yes, you did. You brought up Mother's Day, and you're trying to exploit my pain because I was right about the alcohol content between beer and alcohol.
Well, you're mad about it.
I'm not
mad about it. I feel like a dick, and I know I shouldn't feel like a dick. No.
Isn't that the worst when like you say something and you're like, oh shit.
It's like, okay, all right, listen, let's just move on.
Hey, happy Valentine's Day. I just got a divorce because I caught my wife cheating on me with three dudes. Hey.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, well, can we just move on to other things?
At least it's not Monday.
Yeah, that's true.
What an asshole.
Yeah, that you are. Everyone knows that, though, that listens to us, so.
I'm not the one who brought up Mother's Day after someone's mother passed away. Yeah. Okay, are you ready for our top five?
Yes, please. Anything but this conversation.
Okay, so our top five is top five drinking games. What's your number five?
Edward 40 Hands.
That's a good one. That's a pretty good one.
I always love playing the joke on, well, it's not really funny to say now, but you get people to actually break the bottles. You know, and it's.
Oh, so they cut their hands up.
Yeah, it's not really funny now that I think about it.
No, it's not really funny.
But some people actually have done that I've seen with some helping.
How did they do that? Did they just smash the top of the bottle?
I saw, we'll call him Timmy for just, you know, anonymous sake. We told Timmy the only way that he could get them off his hands was to break the bottle. So he proceeded to, you know, take his hands and smash them up against the side of a house. And that was not good for his wrists or his arms. That was a trip to the hospital for Timmy, which required stitches.
Number one, that's a terrible friend move to take advantage of your drunk friend like that. Number two, that's a great society move, because if that person is stupid enough to think that smashing glass into his own hands was not going to end up badly, then that's the kind of person that shouldn't necessarily be reproducing for the good of our species.
Well, he recovered fully. He has a couple scars, but he's doing well as a family. I don't believe he's played that game since.
Okay, well, I feel bad for his kids.
he's doing just fine, you know. And I'm from what I understand. So, what's your number five?
Oh, I just have. It's called Drinkagories. I think it's one that I don't think it's a common one, but it would be like, hey, you got to name every state with an A, and then. If somebody fails and you go down the row, right, And if somebody fails to name a state that has an A when there's still states left with an A or countries or whatever topic you pick, if they can't pick it, then they have to drink. It's a pretty easy drinking game that you don't have to have any kind of setup or planning. And you can also quit very easily at any time.
That's like the number one rule for drinking games, right? They cannot be complicated because nothing's going to happen.
Be complicated. Yeah. Right.
Nothing will happen.
Right.
Like Monopoly and Risk. Like you cannot play those games drunk.
No, I don't think anybody plays drunk Risk.
It's the first two board games that I thought of. I'm sorry.
Okay. It's not a popular drinking game. What's your number four?
I have Power Hour.
I have Power Hour much higher on the list. Okay. I think that's an underrated drinking game that really sets the tone for an evening. And it's going to last a while, right? That's a tone setter of a game because you're committed. You're committed to a whole hour. And that's going to set you up for the whole night, which is why I actually have that as my number two.
Okay. It's number four. I mean, I think my top three is pretty untouchable. They're pretty awesome games.
I would put Power Hour up there. I think Power Hour is there's really no better tone setter for an evening than a Power Hour. That's a tone setter.
Yeah, for sure it's a tone setter for 100%, but it doesn't crack my top three.
You know, one question I have, and since you and I, do groups of women play drinking games?
I mean, I don't know about groups of just girls, but I know like girls who...
But when they're not around guys, will a group of women play a drinking game?
I think they probably have their own drinking games, like that we don't even think of or maybe even know of.
Man, you can tell that John and I were definitely popular with the women when we were growing up.
My number three is Beerio Kart.
Okay, I'm assuming that has something to do with Mario Kart and beers, and whoever loses has to finish the beer.
Yeah, but you can do it all kinds of things, all kinds of ways. You know, you have to chug a beer, and then you play, and then the loser has to chug two beers, but the winner still has to chug a beer. I mean,
What if you mix in hard liquor? Because that's a completely different alcohol content, according to you, doctor.
I'm going to stick by what I just said.
Right, I understand. Whenever confronted with facts, always dig down.
What's your number three? Dig down. What's your number three?
Deny and do the opposite. Circle of Death. I was a fan of Circle of Death.
I don't know if I know what that is.
I think it's called a couple of different things in different places. That's the one where you have cards, like 52 cards. You make a circle. Somebody picks the card. If it's this color, you get to hand out drinks. If it's this color, you got to take them. And then there's like different rules for Jack, Queen, King. Might be called Kings in other places. It's called Circle of Death where I grew up.
I got you. Okay. Out in the country, out in the field.
Out in the hard, hard streets of Wichita.
Purple Pig, RIP.
what's your number two?
Flip Cup.
I know what your number one is. Is it going to be beer pong?
It has to be.
I think beer pong is an incredibly overrated game. I think it's very overrated. Has to be in a top five simply because of its popularity over the last couple of years. But it's a highly overrated game. Not really that fun.
No.
Not compared to Flip Cup.
I think I've gotten into more drunken fights over that game than any other reason.
Flip Cup is basically beer pong boiled down into a 1 minute stretch.
Yes. And it's just
the
fun.
Intensity, the competition.
Liquor pong is, you play a couple rounds of that, that'll do you right.
Oh, but yeah, that's actually pretty, that's probably, you really probably shouldn't do that for your health.
Because liquor shots are stronger than beers.
They're not.
What's your number one? Please, let's just...
Flip Cup.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, a beer pong is, like, I have a love-hate relationship with it, because I was pretty good at it, so...
There's the thing is, oh man, here we go. Captain of the ping pong table, between ping pong and Flip Cup, he dominates it no matter what, during the day and at evening.
You have to have a strategy, you have to have a good partner. The partner's
What's
key.
The strategy? To have somebody better than you, with you?
No, it's the cups. You know, you want to go for the cups that are the hardest ones to hit first.
Wow. Then what do? Go to the easier ones?
Yeah, you leave the middle ones. You go for the ones on the outside or whatever shape they're in. And then you know.
I'm going to leave this up to the audience to see if this is a brilliant strategy or not. It doesn't particularly strike me as a brilliant strategy. It's kind of like, hey, you know what? In baskets, what you want to do is remember a three-pointer is worth more than a two-pointer. So try to hit those.
I mean, you can say whatever you want, and the audience can say whatever they want to say. Can you say you're good at any drinking game?
No, the point of the drinking game isn't to be good at it. The point of it is to be bad at it.
No, because you're not competitive enough then.
Yeah, there's nothing that I like more than coming out of a drinking game sober. Because that's what I'm trying to do.
You're a fool, man. You are
that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to win these games. Like, I win by losing. I'm not trying to win the tournament. Like, oh no, I accidentally got drunk playing drinking games. I was trying to play sober.
I remember walking away. Wow. I remember playing beer pong and winning a tournament and like being pretty much stone cold sober just because my adrenaline was flowing so much from wanting to win the tournament.
So then you lost.
But I won.
But you lost. Really? Right? You won the battle, but you lost the war.
I mean, there's what, 10 cups of beer filled up like 2 ounces per beer? That's nothing. Now, if it was 2 ounces of liquor, I would be feeling well.
You'd be dead.
But according to you, 2 ounces of liquor is the same thing as 2 ounces of beer.
No, it's not. That's not what I've been saying at all. It's exactly the opposite of what I've been saying. It is the exact opposite of what I said.
One beer is not the same as one shot. I'm sorry.
Yes, it is. Well, then you go argue with the government. Okay.
I pay my taxes.
What's in your honorable mention?
The only one I had was quarters, just because it's simple and it's a good way to earn drinks, get drinks.
I always found that to be kind of a disgusting game, like when you think about it.
Come on,
right?
Man.
Like here you've got this quarter that's been in somebody's pocket and now you're drinking out of it and just passing it around to everybody else. That's kind of a gross game when you think about it.
Look,
it's not surviving COVID.
All I can say is it's no different than kissing a random person after a night of drinking.
Except you're not generally doing it with like 20 to 30 different people. Okay, that's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, like, download, subscribe, share. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. Let us know what your favorite drinking game is. I think John has the complete wrong mindset when it comes to drinking games. You're not supposed to win. You're supposed to lose. The object, it's not to stay sober. Right? The person who's drinking, oh no, I lost. Like, that's where the fun is. But if you've got one that you think really deserves to be number one and we overlooked it, or just one we haven't heard of, let us know.